Welcome to the Hotspot Podcast. I'm Dr. Jillian Hotz, Director of the Kids Neuroscience Center at the Miller School of Medicine, University of Miami. We're also part of the Miami Project. Here at the Miami Project, we focus on decreasing brain and spinal cord injury in everyone, but our center focuses on children. I'm so excited today to have Ashley Horn with us to discuss youth soccer. Ashley is very special to the Kids Neuroscience Center. Also, I wanted to do this podcast at this time because we just finished the 2024 Summer Olympics and we had such excitement on women's soccer and how the growth of youth soccer and women's soccer has been in North America. So I thought this was a good time to discuss youth soccer. A little bit about Ashley, and then I'm going to invite her to also introduce herself, is that Ashley spent a few years at the Kids Neuroscience Center coordinating our concussion program, but also setting us in motion for how we do business with the Miami-Dade County Public Schools, managing all their concussions through the countywide concussion program. And so not only was Ashley a University of Miami women's soccer player, but now she also has two children of her own that she's coaching soccer for, which she also did as a student here in Miami. So, Ashley, I think, you know, the next thing I'd like to do is just tell, you know, the audience a little bit about yourself and your love for soccer, even as a child growing up.
Thank you. Yes, happy to. And very excited to be here, Dr. Hotz. As you mentioned, I'm a former collegiate soccer player. I started playing soccer at the age of 9. So first fell in love with the game a long time ago. And played majority of my life, had the good fortune of being coached by my dad for a large part of my career. So soccer is in our blood. And now that coaching continues and that pattern of coaching continues as I coach my own kids. So I have an 8-year-old girl and a 6-year-old boy. And I've had the good fortune of having soccer take me a long ways. I attribute it to having met my husband, as we were both athletes in college. And the journey has led me to meet great people like you and become an advocate for safety, because I retired from playing because of concussions. And that's made me really passionate, not only about what soccer can do for kids' development and they grow and the wonderful foundation organized sports provides, but also for the importance of playing the organized sports safely.
Right. So I guess, you know, where I want to go next is really talking about what's going on with youth soccer. And I know you're so engaged still and coaching and mentoring your kids and other kids in your community. But as you and I lived through, you know, concussion was really looked at in soccer players in 2010, 2012, those years where we were really concerned about the numbers happening from heading the ball and then other players, you know, being quite aggressive, hitting each other, and also just the way that the game was played. So in 2015, the U.S. Soccer Federation had to settle a class action lawsuit, and the sort of guidelines were really altered for youth. And, you know, just going over that for people listening, you know, children 10 years and under were no longer to head a ball in practice or games. And children 11 to 13 were only allowed during practice, not games, to do heading practicing and heading in practice. So I think, you know, that really was an important change by the Federation in youth soccer. Can you tell us a little bit about what happens, you know, at your practices and what's been going on now that it's, you know, 2024 summer going into 2025? You know, you go to some of these meetings and coaches meetings. What's happening with this, you know, change and, you know, is it really being abided by?
Well, the landscape has definitely changed. As I registered to coach this morning, I spent some time registering, and part of the required training is now the Heads Up program from the CDC. And that required education of every coach every season is definitely a result of the increased focus on awareness, and a great first step in helping coaches understand what a concussion is and isn't, dispelling old school myths of the bell being rung and people having to have Tweety Bird circling their head for it to be counted as a concussion. I personally love the rule change as a coach. Kids come to practice excited about heading. It's a fun thing. They see the pros on TV do, but it is not an important element of the game for their development. At this age, anywhere from 10 and under, they should really be focused on getting comfortable with the ball at their feet. And I tell the parents on my team, my goal of soccer practice at that age group is to make the soccer ball their favorite toy. I want them walking away from practice comfortable and confident every day with the ball at their feet. And frankly, most of them are not strong enough to put the ball into the air where you would need to head it. They don't have the kicking technique yet. So it's a fun part of the game. Kids love to practice, but it definitely is not necessary for their skill development.
So Ashley, you know, you're a mom, you're also a coach. You're also, you know, have this knowledge about how this beautiful game has been played for many years, and got to play it at, a high level. If you're talking to a community parent, and they're looking for a soccer program for their child, what would you say the most important things they should be looking for and asking questions about?
Sure. I'd say three things. The first, a coach that focuses on individual development and development of team sportsmanship. The benefit of organized sports at young age is working hard, collaborative learning, and working toward a goal and feeling accomplished. The second, and I share this story with the parents on my team at the beginning of every soccer season, I got recruited to play Division I college soccer. I was very fortunate. I never once had a college scout ask me the score of a nine-year-old game, right? No one comes back and asks, well, how did your purple team do when you were 8 years old? The score doesn't matter at this age. What matters is the individual development of the child, getting comfortable with the ball at their feet, building confidence, and most importantly, enjoying the game, because that's what's going to lead them to continuously want to challenge themselves and do more. If soccer is not fun, they'll never want to play again, and you'll be looking for a new sport the next season. The last element is safety. A league that sets the kids up for success should be taking appropriate water breaks, especially here in Florida where it's so warm in the months that we're playing. The coach should be requiring the kids to get on the field with good equipment and providing equipment for kids who are unable to provide their own. Like, these are signs of a well-run program. If you're seeing coaches cut corners or not enforce those rules, I would be concerned.
Great. And then, you know, we talk about inclusivity, access for all kids to play a sport. You know, it seems that soccer isn't as expensive as some of these other sports that, you know, need a lot more equipment, whether it's hockey, football, you know, changing out these uniforms and equipment and skate sizes for hockey and rink time. Tell me about, you know, the accessibility for all types of children and the diversity that it brings.
I think that's one of the most beautiful things about soccer and why it's the world's most popular sport, because regardless of country, location, economic status, it does not take much to work on skill. Famously, Pele, the arguably one of the most famous players on earth, used to train with an orange. He'd train his juggling skills with an orange, and it was smaller than a soccer ball, which really made him focus on his touch and technique. Kids don't need a lot to be successful. A good shoe, closed-toed shoe, best if you can get a cleat, and a lot of cleats are being recycled at secondhand stores. A lot of parents will donate when their child decides they no longer want to play soccer. They'll donate cleats, so the club has a bin of cleats that they provide for anyone who needs them, and a ball. And many organizations will provide a ball for those who can't go out and purchase one. And I think that makes soccer a low barrier to entry.
Yeah, I think those are really important things to take into consideration. You know, and the other thing is sometimes, you know, things happen. You know, you pick your child up after a soccer practice or you're at a game and they do fall or they take a hard hit and they're having trouble getting up. They may be a little bit dizzy. What would you tell parents to look for if they do take a hard hit and maybe there is a question of sustaining the concussion?
I would say let common sense prevail here. People know their kids. They know how they act typically day to day. It's easy to default to writing it off as fatigue or dehydration. Obviously, check those boxes, but use your best judgment. I think parental instinct is a very real thing. The second is err on the side of caution. When in doubt, check it out. And you'd rather be safe than sorry. And yield the warning of the medical professionals you're working with. I know no kid I know wants to sit still or sit out on the sideline and watch their friends play. But encouraging them to do that in line with the medical guidance will be best for the long term.
Where do you see like the sport of soccer going? I mean, you know, we talked about like, yeah, it's the number one sport in the world, but you know, with what's happening here with women's basketball, you know, we just won the gold, women's soccer. Where do you see soccer going as far as like North America?
I hope that the sport will continue to grow. For many years, it's been amongst the fastest growing youth sports. And I anticipate it will continue to be, largely because the things we talked about. One, is a low barrier to entry. Anyone can play. You just need shoes and a ball. Pretty easy to get started. Two, for younger ages, 10 and under, it's pretty simplistic in terms of rules. Baseball, football, you have much more complex play design. Basketball requires a lot more hand-eye coordination that kids at a young age struggle to develop. So you have an opportunity to keep kids engaged. It's continuous sport. For my son was a huge thing. It's the only sport that's been able to keep him consistently active versus sitting out frequently in T-ball. So the low barrier to entry, the fact that it's a sport that's great for very active children who have been sitting in a classroom all day, who want to run around and have continuous opportunity to run and burn energy for an hour, makes it a sport that works really well for the youngest age groups.
And, you know, everything's about, you know, mental health and the focus on mental health and sort of some of these psychosocial issues that are happening, you know, with younger children, specifically, we saw this a lot during COVID, the isolation, and, you know, some of the kids not really doing well outside of a classroom. What would you say, and I see this with my niece and my nephew who play in New York City. They play club, they play school, and they've been playing since they were 5 years old. And now, you know, my nephew's going to college, going to play some soccer there probably. What would you say from the mental health aspects of belonging to a team, developing the skill, and especially, you know, the team spirit? What do you say those positive things are that you really can't find anywhere else.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing in these early elementary age groups. As a parent of two kids in this age group, it's something I think about a lot. There's a study that I read at a point, I think it was from Canfield, but basically he said that 80% of children enter first grade scoring really high on the self-esteem inventory. And by fifth grade, only 20% were scoring equally as high. So there's a really interesting phenomenon we see with children where their self-esteem over those elementary years starts to erode. And a lot of that is social pressure. I think that's a unique thing that we saw in COVID where people were remote and things were more challenging to interact. And it's such a big element of building a child's self-esteem is to help them feel that they have a place in the world and they've got a bigger purpose. And team sports provides that. It also provides a tremendous sense of accomplishment. They set a goal, they work toward it. It also provides discipline and the opportunity to struggle, which is not something a lot of kids have to do day to day. There's a lot of kids who have the good fortune of having things available to them and having to really struggle and through moments that aren't easy is a tremendous benefit of sports. Unique to soccer, there's delayed gratification that comes with soccer because it's not scoring every single play. Sometimes you get a 1-0 match or a 0-0 draw. So I think all those benefits help mold a very susceptible population in those early elementary years and build confidence, which ultimately, as we know, contributes to mental health, not only in the short term, but in the long term.
Right. And I think we can't not talk about that because I see that, and especially being here at the university and taking care of, all these high school athletes, our college athletes, there is a difference. There is a difference seeing those kids that are more confident, have self-esteem, have developed a skill. It's sort of part of their DNA. It actually gives them an instant group of friends. So as you were saying, if you're somebody who is on the quieter side, more likes to spend time by themselves, these team sports really give them the facilitation to really develop these social skills. Yeah, I really see a difference. And I guess, you see it too, with the kids that you coach and your own kids. So I think that's a really important aspect of the game that we sometimes don't talk about. But I'm glad that we had the chance to discuss this today. Anyway, I think that's the questions I had for you today, Ash, and the discussion I wanted to have. Is there anything else you wanted to add for our listeners?
The last thing I'll add is that we're at an exciting moment in U.S. soccer, specifically in the United States, where we have a women's team we're excited to cheer for, which has been great for my daughter. She's doing a school project right now on Alex Morgan, replicating a very positive role model in a U.S. women's soccer star. Even though she wasn't in the Olympics, she knows her from past years. And I hope we'll continue to excel on the international stage because it's so great for the kids to have someone positive to cheer for.
Yeah, very important. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for listening today to the Hotspot podcast. And until next time, stay tuned and stay safe.